You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Middle Please Umpire is again delighted to be sponsored by Step One Underwear, the UK's choice for comfortable, breathable and no-chafe boxers. We have been sent some Step One underwear, have we not, Mark? Separately rather than together?
Yes.
I now exclusively wear them.
I actually do wear them as well. I think they're great for both casual or training. I've worn them at cricket as well.
Have you played whilst wearing a pair of Step Ones?
Yes, I have.
That might be the most exciting thing I've ever heard. I've certainly worn some whilst attending some sort of all-you-can-eat buffet. And I can report that they are gloriously chafe-free. Do you know why they eliminate chafing, Mark?
Why?
It's because they've got something called Ultra Glide panels. They are ethically made using organic bamboo. That is why they're super soft, but also why they're antibacterial. They're suitable for men and women. They're worn by cricketers the world over, as Mark can attest. Do you know the bags they come in are compostable as well? Now, do you have a compost heap, Mark? Compost pile in your garden?
No.
I tell you what, we'll collect up your ones and just post them to me and we'll pop them on ours, because actually we make very good use of the compost. There's a 30-day money-back guarantee on your first purchase, so you can try them out completely risk-free. For a limited time, you can get 15% off the entire range just because you listen to this podcast. Head to step1.life and enter the code MP15 at checkout. Hello and welcome to Middle Please Umpire. My name is Miles Chupp and I'm joined, of course, by Mark Wood. Hello, Mark.
Hello, I'll be Mark Wood. How you doing out there, Miles? Good day.
I'm always very excited by the way you pick up dialects so quickly, and very, very rarely the dialect of the place that you're actually in.
Well, I've been watching myself Yellowstone. I'm back into that documentary series. Now I think I'm a herder, I'm a cowboy, and I'm somebody that you don't want to mess with.
Hi, Woody, I would, of course, very much not wish to mess with you. I've been watching Slow Horses on Apple.
Oh, with Gary Oldman.
Yeah, have you seen this?
Yes, and also Ben Stokes has met Gary Oldman and said it's probably the only person he was ever starstruck by.
I can imagine, yeah. Well, I imagine he's got very charismatic. I mean, in this, he's brilliant. My old friend of mine is the show runner on it, and I hadn't seen it until I got asked to watch it for a podcast. And I've been saving it. I'm on tour at the moment. I've been saving it. So I finished the first series yesterday. It is so good. It is so good. It's very, very exciting.
So when you're on tour, do you like bank all these series up? Because I'm the same. Like I watched Yellowstone, the main one, and now I'm watching this 1883, which is like a sort of spin-off before Yellowstone. But I haven't. It's been out for ages. And I once finished Yellowstone, the main one, ages ago. But I thought, like, you get on tour, I've got a book about people who've won the Victoria Cross that I've been reading at the pool, and I've been watching Yellowstone on the nighttime. That's been like my two things that I've saved up. What's your things?
Well, I've been reading for quite a long time a book by William Dalrymple called From the Holy Mountain.
Is that Jimmy Dalrymple's dad?
It's not Jamie Dalrymple's dad. Jamie Dalrymple, what's he up to these days? It's a travel writer. He wrote a brilliant book called In Xanadu and
another one I read called City of Gins, which is about a year living in Delhi. And then I tell you, I watched a series, Irish series called Kin last week. Absolutely brilliant, about a crime family, but I can't get hold of the second series. It's that, because like you, I guess, except you're on tour with the team. I've got me and my tour manager. So we turn up to a different place every day. Obviously, we're, you know, so you go somewhere, you've got a bit of time to yourself, so maybe read or watch an episode or something and then go to the theatre, do the show. Then you're wide awake until like 2 a.m, so you've got to read again or watch something again. And I'm in Oxford, right now I'm in the dressing room in Oxford Playhouse. I've just had a tantrum about the Wi-Fi, which will have been heard by 6 or 7 people, so that is, of course, in its own way, absolutely mortifying.
And how have you managed to fix it? I can see a cord hanger behind you. We've just stressed that that could possibly be an antenna.
That's right, yeah, yeah. There's an elderly gentleman who's rearranged a wire coat hanger, and it's working. No, of course, what needed to happen was I needed to listen to the person saying, stop shouting and calm down. And it's hard to do in the heat of the moment, because I thought, well, Mark's in... You're in Abu Dhabi.
I prefer to call it Abu Dhabi, if I'm honest.
Are you allowed to tell us what you're up to on the training camp? I'm sure it's not sort of shrouded in secrecy for any sort of sinister ways.
Well, we're working on the new movie, The Scorpion King, out here in the desert, obviously.
Yeah.
No, we're just literally on a 9-day camp. It's gone really well. Everyone's together.
Is it a bit like doing the Duke of Edinburgh award scheme? Trangers, a lot of tin food, rehydrating.
Funny enough, I don't think the Duke of Edinburgh would have been at a 5-6-star hotel in the Ritz-Carlton. That's a beautiful hotel. It's very lardy day. I'm feeling very swish and got that swagger myself. That's why I call it Abu Dhabi.
And you are, these days, you're very at home in this sort of luxury environment, aren't you, Woody? You sort of sashay about the place.
Yeah, there's more black bushes, though. Unfortunately, broth isn't on the menu.
Custard?
No, I haven't seen any custard. But
what's the gravy situation like out there?
I asked gravy yesterday and I said, didn't have any. How can you get an all-you-eat buffet and have any gravy?
How many stars does a hotel need before they start laying on proper gravy? So 6 or 7 doesn't cut the mustard, obviously.
Well, at least when doing 2 stars in my mind. Me and Jack Leach had a really important conversation yesterday. We went through every food and everything like that we would love. Crisps, chocolate, condiments, meat. Yeah. Went through everything. And he couldn't believe that I would have gravy on fish and chips.
Well, presumably that's a sort of West Country. It's entirely different cuisine to the Northeast.
Well, this is the man who, he had like a strange palate. Like, he likes vinegar and everything. He likes pickles and jars, and he doesn't eat any chocolate.
Kimchi?
He's now got a sweet tooth. He would leave it. He likes crisps. He eats like...
Well, we know what his favourite sandwich is, because he gave very detailed description of his favourite... we know what his favourite sandwich was at the time. He just changed his mind.
Yeah, I mean, even biscuits. I mean, I went for the classic chocolate digestive, dark chocolate digestive, because I think it's just a winner on all occasions, whereas Leachy went for shortbread. And again, I love shortbread, but it's a Christmas option for me, that.
Oh, no. It's very much a year-round biscuit.
What in them lovely tins with the, like, robins on and the deer and that?
No, it's not you. That's you're getting suckered into the packaging aspect of it. Never judge shortbread by the container it comes in, Woody, as the old publishing adage goes.
I've got to tell you, I've fallen for that before, because at my grandma's house, she used to have a lovely shortbread tin. I used to go in and it used to be needles and threads. I thought, oh, I'm going to scoff these shortbreads. You open it up, it's like batteries, threads, needles.
Yeah,
like grandma was
could,
the shortbread.
Could barely force them down. Had to have so much gravy, just to be able to swallow the things.
We had a major argument. Well, not an argument, but we had a disagreement.
You and Jack.
Yes, because he said if he could have one condiment for every meal, like we said, you can only have one for the rest of your life. He said I'd have mayonnaise, and I don't like mayonnaise. But I said I would have gravy, and he was like, "What? How can you have gravy?" I says, "Well, gravy goes with most things. If you want a chicken dinner, gravy." If you wanted, like, shepherd's pie, gravy. Yeah.
Relaxing like, bath, gravy.
Yeah. You know what I mean? I said, I don't have to have it on everything, but you wouldn't have mayonnaise on everything, would you? And then he was like, well, I could put it on a spread. And I was like, well, would you not want butter? Well, I could have mayonnaise. So the conversation went on and on. I think at the root of it all is that he doesn't understand the importance of gravy in my life.
No, I suspect he's overlooked that probably. Because he spends so much time sort of bowling in the mirror, doesn't he? To the point that it's effectively given him a stress fracture.
Mate, he is in phenomenal shape. phenomenal.
I've read this somewhere. It said, "God, the guy's unbelievably ripped." And this is just to give him the best chance, I suppose, with his back to keep it as
with his back. Yeah, he looks like Jason Statham.
Does he?
In fact, I think I've never seen them both in the same room.
He's got a new film out that's called something like The Beekeeper.
He'd be great at Backward Point.
I always think that looks absolutely terrible. Maybe I've mentioned this before. I said to I was talking to Victor Marks, who, when you talk to him, although the fact he's like someone that's won a Sheffield Shield and everything, he's, you know, he sounds like a sort of normal person when you're talking to him. And then he was like talking about fielding at point when Clive Lloyd or Viv Richards is batting, and I was that's terrifying. He goes, yeah, it does come at you quite quickly. Yeah. this is sort of classic. Now, he's a West Country person.
Imagine fielding point to Robin Smith.
Oh my! I mean, is it even worth it to save one, or would you just think, well, let's just have two square on the boundary there, a bit like Australia during the opening stage?
No, you do that lazy like arm thing where you like pass it through. It's like,
yeah,
virtually through your legs, but you're like, yours to the kids and no one behind you.
Yeah, yeah. I know it's coming at catchable height next to me, but I can't possibly. what's the most terrifying fielding position you've ever been in, Willie?
Well, I don't feel it slip. I'd be terrified there.
In terms of how often you come into the action, or just that's a particular angle that's not well suited to you?
I just think that because you have to switch on every ball, but it's more like the shock of it going in. I mean, I'm sure people listening who field even in club cricket and stuff, there's some great slippers and then there's some bad ones who just, they might not be bad at catching. It's just that sort of specialist reaction, you know, calmness. I mean, I used to, one of the best ones was obviously Mark Waugh, because he almost didn't look like he cared. Just sort of like had his hands on his legs and it would come and he just going, yep, that's mine. Scott Borthwick's the same at Durham. Hardly looks like he just looks like the most relaxed bloke in the world. Whereas I think I'd like be a bit jumpy. Like, it's coming. Oh my God, catch it. And then all of a sudden it's hit me in the knee.
Does Stokes, is he sort of back in the slips now? Is he captain, or have you got to be at mid off really, or somewhere where you can chat to your bowler?
Well, that's a good point. I think he will be at mid off most of the time if he can be. He's an unbelievable nick as well. Most of the boys have turned up here, and everybody's in a real great place physically.
Johnny Bairstow?
I think going to India, yes. I didn't want to like obviously big it up too much and things like that, but I think the group see this as a bit of a free hit. You know, India didn't get beat much at home. And we might as well just give it a go. It's a bit of a free hit. It's nice that we've been able to prepare here in Abu Dhabi, because what we've been doing would be putting sand and other bits and pieces, scuffing the wicket to replicate the spin. We've also had like good wickets for batting, so replicate like pace bowlers on good wickets. We've had different ones, and basically this Abu Dhabi Sports City, they'll give you any wicket that you want, like, or any facility. So we've had middle practices.
Is it massive? Is it like a sort of Premier League training ground, you know, like a sort of Cobham where they've got 52 pitches or whatever?
Yeah, and it's amazing that you said that, because Wolves have been in our hotel. Wolverhampton Wanderers, the football team.
Yeah.
Stephen Gerrard's team are here now. Take that, we're here. Not that
minus one member.
Yes. And Abu Dhabi Knight
Riders. Did you say take that?
Yeah. Yeah, they've been here.
What are they training for? What particular event? Big meeting with their accountant, maybe.
No, I think it was actually speed walking. You've got to get across that stage fast nowadays, Miles.
You do, they play big arenas. Yeah. You've got to fill the space. That is.
And then the Abu Dhabi Knight Riders are here. So David Willey, and there's some English lads here. But Wolves, all of their players, wow, at the condition they're in. I mean, they have been doing couch to 5K, let me tell you, numerous occasions.
If you watch like if you get to like a Premier League game early and you watch their sort of pre-match drill, that is already, you've already done a boot camp by the time you sort of wander back to the changing room and get into your match day kit, that kind of level. But also, do you have to prepare for the, I know sometimes if you're going somewhere humid, you'd have that thing where you'd sort of fill a wedding marquee with sort of steam, essentially, to prepare for sort of humidity. What can you do to prepare for the heat? Because that's what, I remember watching Steve Harmison bowling, you know, coming in off his that lovely long smooth run up, but in unbelievable heat at Chandigarh and in Mumbai and stuff, thinking, I don't know how you can do what you do. You know, it's not something that you've been prepared for, I think, in Ashington, that sort of intense heat. Obviously, the intense heat of competition, but how, is part of what you're doing just acclimatizing to very, very hot conditions?
Yep, and time and getting used to the wickets are obviously different at home. Some lads have been in the Big Bash in Australia. Obviously, those wickets play differently here. So I think it's just the whole thing, you know, getting off the jet lag, making sure we're, you know, used to the heat. And really, though, when you're in that heat, it can be ridiculous. I mean, the World Cup game in Mumbai, that's got to be right up there for one of the hottest games I've ever played in. I was just getting the fourth ball thinking, just got to get through the end of this over. Just got to get through the end. So, and almost, you cared if it went for 4-6, obviously, but it was almost just like you survived the over because it was just so hot. And you had, like, your head felt like it was going like, wow, wow, wow. And it's obviously
a horrific feeling.
But you're in that competition where you can sort of trick your mind that you're in the battle. So you probably don't notice it until you come off the field and you're like, whoa, that was tough work. But when you're in the battle, you sort of have this ingrained determination that you don't want to let anybody down.
The mental state that you are in when you're on the outfield during a test match, mm-hmm. is that a state that you can replicate in any other environment?
No.
So how do you do that thing when you haven't played for ages and you suddenly rock up like at Headingley last summer and you're just there from ball one? Is it a big switch you've got inside you?
You lean on experience a little bit. You know, that I've been in some of these scenarios before with test matches, or I've had layoffs and then come back. So I think lean on that, but also, you know, a lot of the times it's the training behind closed doors. People don't see. Now when it's freezing cold in England in the garage, you're pounding out on the treadmill, or, you know, I have to have a cortisone injection somewhere, and I've had about 60 of them. So it's like, it's all these little things that prepare you for tours or prepare you that people won't see.
What about the watching stuff? I watched your Headingley spell the other day. It came up on the... I'd put your name into Google just to get your exact birthday, because I suddenly thought, oh, no, I think I've missed Woody's birthday. And then one of the first things that came up was, like, YouTube, the whole of your spell. And presumably things that you can watch like that every now and then.
I will think back to the Pakistan tour of, you know, similar conditions there. How did I go there? How did we win games there? How did I influence it? And I'll think about that. So yes, you do look back. Then it's also these guys, how will it be different? How will players... And these are all things that you can't really prepare until the day. That's the beauty about cricket. Sometimes you have to work it out on the day as you're going. I had a poor World Cup, no hiding from that. And, you know, I feel like I've got to try and prove a point here. Whether that happens or not, that's, you know, it's a little bit out of my hands, but I'll be doing everything I can to try and prove that, you know, the World Cup was just a one-off or a poor show, and that I am actually a decent bowler.
Mark, I can assure you, I'm no expert, but I'm an enthusiast. I think you are. I do think you're a decent bowler.
So tell me what the difference is between my tour prep and your tour prep. For example, as I'm sat here at the Ritz-Carlton in Abu Dhabi, yeah, I sometimes see the odd private jet flyover. No doubt you're very similar. Oxford up to Edinburgh on a private jet, I can only assume.
I don't know. We've an Audi we're travelling around in.
No shark bus?
No shark bus! No shark bus. You know, we're going to stay in wherever suits, you know. If I'm playing a bigger venue, we might sort of splash out in a bigger hotel. I've been just in a Holiday Inn there in Manchester, which is next to where... It was the studios where I'd done a lot of episodes of 8 out of 10 Cats This Countdown, so the bar was extremely familiar to me there. But I'm in that... When you're talking about the mind state there, I'm in that thing where it's early on in my tour. I've done four of the dates. I've done some previews last year and this year. But it's that thing where there's a point where you're concentrating on the sort of the words of the show, as it were, and then you get to a point when that gets into your... This is hopefully the sort of phase I'm in now, where it's in the muscle memory, it's in the bones, and so actually what you're doing is really focusing... There's a point when you're focusing entirely on the show. Like, imagine you would be at the beginning of a spell or whatever. You're like, where am I pitching, whatever. And then you get to the point when that's in the bones. What I'm then focusing on is entirely the audience. So you're focusing, the show's there, the words are there, it's there. But actually, so entirely what you're doing is absolutely focused on the audience. And rather than playing the show, as it were, you're playing the audience that's in that room. And this is all exciting me, because I haven't done a stand-up tour for 7 years, and suddenly you're going through all these different phases.
And do you tweak exciting. Your stuff? Like if the ball's swinging a little bit more in a spell and you have to adjust your time?
That's right, yeah.
your line.
Sometimes you just sometimes you come up against an audience and you just got to bowl dry. Really, you're like, well, I can just all I can do is contain them. Obviously, that's as much as I can do. And you know, if I do it in a certain way, perhaps someone will come in tomorrow and get a load of laughs, and it's because of the pressure that I've built up inside the theatre at this particular moment. But I'm
in last night?
Oxford Playhouse, which is a fantastic theatre.
Did it go well?
Yeah, they were lovely. They were really nice crowd. I'm off to Wimbleminster tonight.
Well, funny you should say that, because we have a viewer from Middle Please On Mayor who attended the show.
Really? In Oxford?
Yes, Lucy, a fan of the show, Middle Please On Mayor. She was there. She's been in contact. And we know that you don't like reviews, Miles. Ones on your show or DRS. We know that you're a traditionalist. But yes, she was in Oxford last night, and she says she got cramp in her face from laughing that much at your show.
Oh, that's very nice. Oh, well, thank you, Lucy. Thank you for coming. Thank you for getting in touch with Middle Please Umpire. They were a really nice audience.
We are grateful to the lovely people at Spond for supporting this series of Middle Please Umpire. Spond is the UK's number one sports management app that will save you hours of valuable time when organising your team. Let's hear from one happy cricket club.
Hi guys, Jonathan Spiller here, director of Wimbledon Cricket Club. We've now been using Spond at Wimbledon Cricket Club for several years, and it's been an invaluable resource for our club. The addition of the availability feature has been extremely valuable in ensuring we have the right players on the park and a fair distribution of matches for our juniors. Our coaches find Spond an incredibly helpful tool to communicate directly with players prior to training sessions, enabling them to run efficient and targeted practice sessions. Spond brings our club together as one club, supporting us on administration, freeing up our time to deliver our programs with excellence.
Spond is available on iOS and Android and is free. Download the Spond app and try it for your team or club today.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
You'll know the answer to this. Is the that thing when you arch your back and then lower your back, is that called cat cow or cat curl?
Cat camel.
Cat camel. I thought it was
cat meow, camel.
But why would it? I thought it was called cat. Do write in, listeners. I thought it was called. I got it into my head that it was called cat cow because I suppose the sort of. The curvature of a cow's spine, yeah,
like
maybe the lower bit.
Like a camel.
Yeah.
So you got the two humps.
But isn't that...
And then the cat.
But I thought the cat bit was the arching bit, because of the way that cats arch their backs.
Yeah, but if you dip your back, you've got two humps, haven't you?
We had quite a long conversation about this at the table, whilst being entirely sedentary and doing no exercise. But I was convinced it was called cat-cow.
Sir, I got here as fast as I could. I had to put my horse around the corner. I'm delivering a letter, sir, out of my mail bag.
What?
Maybe it's from somebody from the country, and he wants to tell me about the mail bag and how that mail bag contains letters. And those letters, they've been stuck down, but stuck down electronically. You know what I'm saying? The stamp is in the corner of this letter. Well, this letter contains information about the cricket.
Okay, the mailbag. Here we go. This act, oh, this one. Now, I forwarded this today. This was sent by a friend of mine, that friend being Johnny Barron, the cricket commentator. Ollie Robinson, sporting a new haircut, clocked by his youngest at Cobham Services. Starbucks white mocha, medium, he thinks. Is it Ollie Robinson got a new haircut?
Yes, peroxide blonde, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, so that's a good find out as well. He's tall, obviously. I mean, would he have had a cap on? I mean, are we saying that that's an easy shout? Because I think that's, even though he's changed his hair, I think that's a good spot.
I think they've done well there. Okay, podcasters at the cinema from Cy Fuchs. I have just been to see Napoleon, a film I had been excited about for many months, and one of the few things that would tempt me into paying £7 for popcorn. Imagine my surprise, and my wife's in particular, when I loudly exclaimed, "It's Miles Jupp!" during the tense exchanges at Austerlitz. Sadly, there weren't any cricket badges in the Oval audience tonight, it seems. Keep up the good work. That's very. Have you seen Napoleon, William?
I haven't yet, but I'm desperate to see it.
It is. It's good fun. It is good fun. That's a good spot. Yes, I pop up as the emperor.
I'm sure I've asked you this before, but in your Austrian costume, did you play any shadow shots? Did you maybe play one hand, one bounce? I mean, what happened?
Well, it was quite hard to move because...
Is Joaquin Phoenix a cricket fan?
Joaquin Phoenix, I suspect he's not a cricket fan. I don't think he's a cricket person. I think he's... I feel he's probably got time. His time is spent getting more slightly sort of offbeat projects off the ground.
Yeah, but I feel like his personality, he'd fit in at any dressing room. I mean, he could be a joker in any dressing room.
Yay, very good. Yeah, and that is, of course, you've summed up there, the Napoleon does offer a chance. It's where Batman and Middle Please Umpire meet. I managed to connect those two things. Here we go. This is a sensible question. This is from Jenny Chambers. Hello, gentlemen. Good to have you back. Miles, you mentioned recently that the playlist that plays in venues pre-show is chosen by you, so you can enjoy the playlist while you prepare to go on stage. I'm curious to know what you chose this time around.
A great question.
I'll have to look it up because my memory.
Miles, press play quickly. Miles, press play.
I'm going to find it. There we are.
I'll take you to the candy shop.
There's something by one of my favourite groups, the folk trio from Stockton-on-Tees, the Young'uns. Some of them.
Go,
there's a bit of Bell and Sebastian.
Go, shorty. Oh, Miles, stop it. You have to stop.
Manic Street Preachers, Motorcycle Emptiness. Moving on up by Primal Scream. That's a nod to... a dance I have to do in the Full Monty series to that. Bit of Steel Ice Span all around my hat because as a result of a situation at a folk weekend I was at where a gentleman...
I feel like you've not just chose the songs because you like them, but like because they remind you of things. Is that right? Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's fair. The Universal by Blur, I think that's just glorious. A bit of Nina Simone, Baltimore... some Lindisfarne, Woody, you know, because I think it's important that the North East are well represented.
Love that.
So, yeah, a bit of... Rainy Night in Soho is what plays at the end of the show by the Pogues, and that is an excellent tune.
I can't argue and say that's a good playlist. I think you've done well. And I like the fact that it reminds you of events.
Here we go. Oh, yes. Also, I recall Phil Tufnell having cigarettes and alcohol by Oasis as his walk-on tune. Quickly ask what would be our walk-on tunes. You could have, I don't know, maybe Gravy Train, something like that. I don't know what I...
If we were to have it together?
If we were walking out to what? To bat together, what would we are?
Me? Is this just like me and you?
It's the individuals. I imagine it would be me in a club environment and you playing for England, possibly. Oh.
Well, if we came out together, sure, we would have, like, sort of, like... It'd have to be, like, Danger Zone or something like that, wouldn't it?
The Danger Zone, the sort of top... Gun. Yeah, I think that gives it, you know...
Yeah, well, we'd have that together, wouldn't we? I mean, we're ready for battle. Oh, thou shalt have a fishy. On the little fishy, thou shalt have a fishy.
We'll have that version, that one I sent you. I've got that one. Remember when Robson Green recorded it for us? I think that's what we'll have. We'll have Robson Green singing "If You Can Have a Fishy on a Dishy." This is another letter. An unfortunate injury. Thank you very much, by the way, for your letter, Jenny. This is from...
Tim Vine, not your stand-up mate, Miles, the one who wrote in about the Rev from the Dev and his unfortunate barned-out dismissal on 99. I caught up with some school friends recently, and a particular cricket story of old caused us much amusement. It also seems to have been a while since we had a tale of someone getting thwacked in the unmentionables. The match was an under-16 Colts game between our school, Kings Bruton, away at somewhere I now forget, but was memorable for the fact that its wicket was a particularly cracked, dry and vicious one. Our skipper, I wouldn't want to name him in full, so we'll just call him JK, was a fantastic number three batsman, a South African combining the determination of a Hashim Amla with the flair of an AB de Villiers. He was also in possession... Can I believe I'm reading this out? He was also in possession of some impressively large dangling testicles. What is the point at which you become of this aware... I don't know, perhaps... That is the sentence. That's what I've heard out. He was in possession of some impressively large dangling testicles. I suppose it's the word impressively that actually jumps out from that sentence the most. It's not just a fact. It's like you've editorialised it. It's, in terms of how you're feeling about them, you're like, well, those aren't just large and dangling. They're actually impressive. Gosh, those are more like udders. Anyway. We can't let this go. Quickly, go and get a stool and a bucket. We can't let him go out to bat like that. Right. Despite his immense talent, JK was struggling to get into a rhythm given the unpredictable nature of the wicket. I remember this well as I was down the non-striker's end when he prodded forward at a ball just short of a length, which jagged back in, missing bat but clattering into his box with that dull thud that absolutely no one wants to hear. Least of all, JK... One of his unfeasibly dangly balls had apparently worked its way out of said box and had now been...
How is he not double box?
Had now been guillotined as a result.
Oh, no.
There was a moment of silence as we realised what had happened. The poor lad let out a low, almost inaudible moan, swiftly turned the colour of his cricket whites and fell to his knees, then forward onto his hands. My question's answered. His back arched as if demonstrating the perfect cat-camel yoga pose and uptamed the entire contents of his mediocre pre-match. Having been helped to his feet, he was... Having been helped to his feet, he was led from the field by his ever-present parents. Who had dashed to his aid from the boundary edge.
I know how you feel, son. Don't worry, I know how you feel, son.
You come with me. We'll go back to the boot of the car and we'll get the icebox. Right. We'll need two iceboxes, obviously, because they really are impressively... dashed to his aid from the boundary edge. A savage reminder to anyone out there with the... A savage reminder to anyone out there with a set of drippy nutsacks. You can't have a set of nuts. Well, anyway, to ensure both are safely inside the box when facing any delivery. Thank you very much indeed, Tim, for that. Somehow uplifting, yet at the same time deeply cautionary tale. That's right. Yeah, double box. Double box, if in doubt. I hope that everything is returned to full working order.
Hi, it's David Gower here. Yes, it's me. Look, it's slightly embarrassing, but look, Mark and Miles, they've forgotten the email address again. So look, if you've got any cricketing tales, stories, whatever it might be you want to send to them, please email them at middleplease@hotmail.com. And if that's too much, well, try Twitter or Instagram.
Thank you very much indeed for these letters. And thank you also to... Lucy, you said that wrote in that been in Oxford. Right?
Yes, and obviously time for today's guest. I will give you a hint, Miles. If you can think of maybe slime coming down and hitting you, what would you say?
I've been gunged.
Close. What's another word for gunged? Like if you've got green slimy stuff.
Goo.
It feels
goo.
Did you shake it off?
Thank you to our sponsors, Mindful Chef, to whom we are very grateful for their support. Mindful Chef make healthy eating easy. You'll find delicious, healthy recipes, high in protein, with no stodgy carbs, refined sugars, or artificial anything. All of their meals are high in good fibre, thank the good Lord, the kind your gut loves and are easy to prepare. In fact, a whopping 94% of their customers say that Mindful Chef makes healthy eating easier for them. I mean, the other 6%, goodness knows what is going on with them. Perhaps they're the sort of people that just don't follow instructions. For heaven's sake, people, get a grip. Now, there are 20 new recipes to choose from each week that are completely flexible. It's all delivered to your door. There are no tie-ins or other commitments. You don't have to invite them in and say, oh, no, you must eat with me. You brought it all this way. That's absolutely fine. They're not expecting it. In fact, if anything, they're commitment phobes. Just healthy food with no supermarket queues. And you can get 25% off your first four boxes by signing up and using the code MIDDLEPLEASE, all one word. Welcome to Middle Please Umpire. Like Mark Wood, a World Cup winner, like Mark Wood, an Ashes winner. It's Isha Gua. Hello, Isha.
Hello to you both. Great to be on the podcast. Thanks for having me.
You've caught, well, Mark, I'm in my normal sort of back on my heels mode, but Mark is, even by his own standards, quite hyper today. He's trapped in a hotel room, as he spends a lot of his life when he's not sort of in traction. You've got a spinny chair, haven't you, Mark?
Whee!
Yep. All I've been doing for the last 10 minutes is wheeling myself around this lovely hotel room. Feels like I've had a bit of a sugar rush.
It's maybe like the last hour before a child finally realises they do actually have to go to bed. You're in that kind of motoring stage. But we'll get as much sense as we can.
Yeah. I'm just so excited that Isha's on, man. That's why. I mean, when Isha goes off, I'll probably just crash back on the bed, you know, deflated, that everything's gone.
Sugar fix. Are you saying I'm a sugar fix?
That's right. I'm ready for it. Come on, Isha. Let's go. What we got?
Okay. Ooh. I don't mind that.
You made your England debut at the age of 17, is that correct, Isha?
I think I did, yeah. That's that's when I reckon I made my England debut. But
what do other people
records
think?
Records actually began when I was 16 because I played for England. It was a senior team, but it was in my opinion, it was an England A team. But that's when records began.
At the time, then, how sort of ready did you feel for that? Was that what you were reaching for at the time? I mean, now there are quite a lot of people who are 17 suddenly getting to the higher level, but you're quite a sort of trailblazer.
Well, yeah, it was kind of weird back then because I feel like, yes, there are a lot of 17-year-olds that come in, but also it was quite similar around the time that I was getting in. So Lydia Greenway, Jenny Gunn, Catherine Brunt, we're all sort of a similar age. Holly Colby made her debut at the age of 15 in a test match. She had a good time in the nets down at Hove ahead of an Ashes test. They needed a left-arm spinner to bowl at the batters to basically emulate Shelley Nitschke, and she did so well that they drafted her straight in. So that was an incredible selection. But yeah, for me, 16, 17, I didn't really know there was an England women's cricket team until I was probably 12. That's when I met Charlotte Edwards for the first time. She was this child prodigy at the age of 16, already tearing up for England. And that's when I started thinking, okay, if I'm like playing with these girls and doing okay, then maybe, you know, there's an opportunity there. And I remember that summer that I got my call up, they'd already announced the England squad. And I was actually a bit devastated because I was like, oh, I think I've bowled pretty well in the regionals, and I reckon I can mix it with the team. But I wasn't selected, and then I actually got drafted in because a couple of the girls had gone away on holiday and they hadn't told them the coaching staff. So
yeah, this does make it sound slightly sort of more old fashioned, doesn't it? Yeah. A couple of others got suspended for smoking, going to the cinema without permission. It's hard to imagine. That's the equivalent, really, of you, Woody, playing for England in basically 2009.
Yeah,
that's how ready can you? I can picture Mark Wood as a 16-year-old or 17-year-old. It's a slightly terrifying thought. You wouldn't have the sort of maturity that you demonstrate now, Woody. But how ready would you have been if, like, you were 17, Woody? What level were you even playing at? Northumberland?
No, so I just finished Northumberland, going into Durham Academy. So I was nowhere near even ready to be at the level that Isha would have been. I mean, my action was so different. I had to work on loads of things. And now I'm just a totally different player. Were you the same, or were you just so natural when you first came in?
Well, I think the difference for me all those years ago was that there wasn't much video footage, if any. So I didn't actually know what I looked like when I was bowling. And people used to say, oh, arms and legs everywhere. And I just didn't. It made me feel very self-conscious. And then I was like, oh, maybe I need to have a look at what I'm doing. So it was only when I was playing for England that I actually fine-tuned my bowling a bit more and became a bit more efficient. And another similarity for me and Woody, I was a quick bowler, except I used to run past the ball when I was bowling it. So I was a little bit slower than Woody. But yeah, it was something that I needed to work really hard on as I got into this. So I had a really decent first year, and then I found myself out of the team and I had to work on my game to force my way back in. But yeah, I think that was probably the biggest difference, is that I was kind of learning on the job.
So what did you work on?
Oh, just alignment. I worked a lot on alignment. I worked on the other thing I relied on was natural variation. So sometimes I didn't know whether I was going to swing it away or in on any given day. And it's that classic, you know, if the batter doesn't know what you're doing, then if you don't know what you're doing, then the batter's not going to know what you're doing. So that was kind of how it worked for me. And then obviously I could kind of seam it around as well. Always visualizing where I was going to. A lot of people visualize different things. So whether it's where you're pitching the ball, or you might look at a general area. For me, it was always what I wanted the batter to do. So visualizing the shot I wanted them to play. I
cannot believe you're saying this. I've literally had this same conversation with Flint Off. Exactly the same. So he used to say to me, he said, because we're talking about Yorkers, and I said, oh, Fred, like, did you just run up and did you look at the hole? Did you? And he was like, I used to visualize before I used to bowl exactly how I wanted it to go, where the batsman would try and hit it. And all I would visualize is the feel of that ball going where I wanted. And it's literally what you've just said. Stuart Broad does as well, as a lot as well, visualizing exactly how he can see himself bowling the ball and how it would look going towards the batter.
But isn't this also what people like Noel Edmonds do? They just sort of think about the thing that they kind of want, and they kind of will it into being.
That's interesting with Woody, though. Like, so is that not something you do?
It's like yes and no. Like, I've visualized what I want to do, but I wouldn't say it to the point where. So when Fred was talking about, it was almost like it was married up with his feel, and I've reckoned mine's more feel, and then I'll review what I've done after. And that's then, right, I think, right, I've reviewed that one. I want it to go better like this time. Whereas his was more like he could see what was going to happen and visualize it before.
Yeah.
And then feel that visualization. It's amazing that the way you said that was in, like, the way that you'd put it across was just, it was nearly exactly the same as what he said to me. It was weird.
That's mad.
Well, it's the class of 2005.
It is the Bobby Tulsa thing.
What? Because that 2005, there's this sort of summer which is now kind of mythologized, I suppose. You know, tell us about it from your perspective, Isha, because you're part of that sort of mighty cavalcade.
Oh, that was one of the best summers ever. there are a few of us of a similar age in the team. We hadn't played Australia for a long time, so when I came into the team in 2002, you know, there are all these stories of the Australians and how amazing they were, and I guess war stories essentially, and lots of scars for the senior players in the team. So when we finally started getting our opportunities, we played them earlier on in the year in the World Cup in the semi-final, and we just didn't really have that fear of Australia. We wanted to test ourselves against them, and we lost to them, but we left that game thinking that we could have beaten them, and that was like a major step for us as a group. So when we got to that summer, it was all a bit weird because I feel like we played a couple of ODIs, which we lost, and then the Hove test match, which without Aaron Brindle, we would have lost that match. She saved the test for us. She got a century. And then we played another ODI and we ended up winning that at Stratford. And that felt like such a big shift for us because we hadn't beaten Australia in 10 years in a one-day international. And then all of a sudden this belief started coming. Our opening batsmen were smashing Catherine Fitzpatrick, who was... he's arguably been the greatest bowler ever, bowling at 80 miles an hour, Woody. Yeah, seeing them smash her back over her head was like, wow, we can take it to the Aussies. So, and then we were feeling the vibe from the men's team as well. So the things that they were doing were feeding back to us. And while we weren't on television as much, you know, we would get back after a day's play and we'd watch the guys and get inspired by them. And yeah, it just fed into what was just a ridiculous summer. And then obviously the celebrations, I still remember some of them. but the celebrations, you know, driving through the streets of London on an open top bus, we didn't care that everyone thought we were the wags.
And what about then, how easy was it for you to sort of, once you retired, to make your, to get into sort of commentary and stuff? Was there a plan to that, or you take chances when you get it?
Yeah, never a plan. I personally never thought I could speak in public. So I remember doing an interview with Mark Nicholas when I was playing with England, and it was so bad that they took the mic away from me very quickly. and then I just happened to get this opportunity to present the IPL. So ITV had the rights to the IPL. The woman who was supposed to do it had fallen pregnant, so they needed to draft someone in, and they were looking for a female of Asian descent who knew about cricket, and I just happened to fit the bill. So yeah, they messaged me on Twitter and got me in, and I thought, okay, yeah, they probably just want me as a pundit. I've done that before, no problem. But they were like, no, it starts in 2 weeks. We want you to do a screen test. We want you to present. And I was like, wow, okay. And I just embraced it. I was like, well, I have no idea if I'm going to be any good.
I'm sweating now.
Do it.
You say that, I'm like, oh my God, like 2 weeks you're in, like presenting, wow.
Yeah, literally. And it was, but whenever an opportunity's come around like that, I just think, well, what's the worst that could, I'm a little bit different now that I'm a bit older, but at the time I was like, yeah, no worries. Like I'll have a go.
And did you smash it? Like, were you different? Are you different now to what you were then? Or were you like straight away? Yeah.
Arms and legs all over the place.
I was horrendous. I was arms and legs all over the place. I didn't know which camera to look at. Like my voice as well was super like,
it's a question of alignment essentially.
I was so aligned. I was so monotone. Like my voice did not change, and I didn't know which camera. Like I was so, I had no, like, it was just no sense of what was going on. But the thing that got me through was my cricket knowledge. So I could ask the right questions. And then on the back of that, I just started getting more opportunities. So I was doing radio. I was working with Sky. I was doing the reporter role, and then getting chances over in India, which was another completely different experience. Like I was having to dance on stage and stuff like that. And
it's just like the IBL. Yeah.
That was taking me out of my comfort zone. Just like, but then I realized actually, okay, you know, I'm getting these opportunities. Let's take this opportunity by trying to throw yourself into different environments to learn. And over time, I was fortunate to get more chances. And then I got the chance to work at the CPL. And that was a great way to develop my commentary without the pressure of knowing that people were sort of listening to me a lot back home. Yeah, so that's kind of how it started.
Because what are the sort of transferable skills from playing, you know, a sport at an elite level? Are there lessons that you can take that from then sort of from commentating on it in terms of even just thinking, okay, this is nerve-wracking, but I've faced pressure before. What is there anything you can carry over, or do you really actually feel?
Yeah, I mean, Rich is surprised because I do get nervous, less so now, but certainly early days, I would put a lot of pressure on myself to do it in the right way. And he always says to me, for some, like, I don't know how you do it, but you like are faced with these really difficult challenges, but you manage to, you always get through it. And I think that's definitely come from playing. And managing pressure when I've played. Woody, I don't know if you feel the same. Like, I mean, when you come into commentary, it feels pretty natural because you've got someone leading you in a way. But when you're presenting, it's a very different story. And now I've just done it so much that I feel really comfortable in that role. But, when I was first starting out, it was really nerve-wracking.
I feel like the first thing that came to my mind there was you're exposed. A bit like in cricket, you're the only one bowling. You're at the top of your mark, no matter, you know, you've got all the backing of the fielders, which I guess could be the crew behind and people helping you, but you're the one that has the ball and you're exposed. That's the first thing I thought of there, is that I've worked with Ishan. She's unbelievable at her job, the way that she can conduct and almost run the players to help everyone else out.
Sort of
it's a lot of plate spinning, isn't it, doing that sort of stuff?
It's the stuff in your ear. Like, people are like going blah, 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 blah. In the background, I'm like, I kind of, am I speaking Isha or am this guy eating crisps or what's going on? Like, that's a bit that I kind of work with. It's kind of hard.
Well, they shouldn't be eating crisps in your ear. That's a no-no.
You actually might have tinnitus, Woody.
Need to see a doctor.
Have you got a regular buzzing in your ear?
Yeah, yeah. Just put a little bit of warm oil in it, Woody. See if it makes a difference. Just soften it for you.
Yeah, we're there. Whee!
I thought for Woody, like, radio commentary is more dangerous for you because that's an environment that's very there's a lot of cabling about, and you're obsessed with spinning on chairs. And I'd have thought that's a kind of recipe for disaster.
I have knocked Isha off before, actually, by accident. We were doing the 100, weren't we, Isha? And there was a button, and you had to press the button when you're coming on to say, like, that your mic is live on air. So I pressed the button thinking that it was my button, but it was Isha's. So she was commentating and such and such, and she was like, Woody, that's my button, and turned back on, missed like a whole dialogue of play because I'd pressed the wrong stuff. So I'll probably not be asked back. I mean, it's one of my learning curves from. I mean, if you're struggling to press a button, I mean, it's downhill from there. You know? Let me ask, before we move on, I just got to know, who's the best to work with, Ish? Who do you really enjoy?
There's always, like, what I love about commentary is that you have so many different personalities, and, like, you just work with that person to get the best out of them, and they're always offering something different. So that's what I love about what we do. I love working with Nas because I feel like I'm a bit of a badger and I love strategy, and I just feel like we bounce off each other. But in terms of just having a bit of a laugh, but also just being an amazing broadcaster, I'd say Phil Tufnell. It's just, he's so easy to work with, and he can just do anything. And he's always got that sense of fun about him as well. And I just think his voice is incredible. And I think we bounce off each other really well. But I think he does that with pretty much everyone he sits next to. So for me, I love working with him. And then obviously Shane, he was one of my favorites because, I mean, he's Shane Warne, but I just loved his brain. So I literally, even if we weren't on camera, we'd be chatting about cricket or just having a laugh. And that definitely came on. I felt like that came through when we were on air as well. But I'd say those three. I mean, look, everyone that I work with is so much fun. But yeah.
With that generation of cricketers as well, you get, it's almost like there's a transitional phase because Warne was playing at that point when they, you know, when they'd started doing the thing where you'd have a microphone, few of the players would have a microphone on and could talk to the commentators during the game, I suppose. And his ability to kind of call the action whilst being the action was kind of amazing. And it was such an amazing innovation that you sort of see him walking back to his mark, going, I'm going to do this now, I'm going to do this, watch you watch this. And like the audience was in on what the batsman wasn't. It was completely extraordinary.
Yeah, I just don't think you can beat that sort of insight. That's why I've always wanted to push for it at the BBC with the mics that we have there. And Alex Hartley did something similar for us last year. She called us through and over, and it was absolute gold. And then we had Tim Arr this year wearing the mic as he was sort of running into bowls, so we could kind of hear his thought processes. You've got to be careful, though, because obviously there's like rules and regulations around telling us what they're about to bowl. But yeah, it's I think this just offers so much insight.
Like, obviously it's great when things go right and people look like a professional and how good it is, but sometimes it's nice when it goes wrong so you can see how people react.
That's why Tim Arr this summer was brilliant, because he was sort of saying, well, I'm going to do this because I think this, and then he might not have got it right, and he'd say oh yeah, I didn't quite get that quite right, I might just do this. But we weren't able to speak to him in that moment, so there wasn't the back and forth. But I think it was like one of the first times we did it, he got smashed for like four or six first ball, and then we were in the commentary box going, oh, this could maybe not this could be a little bit awkward. And then he got a wicket in next ball, so we were like, yeah.
Oh, unlucky.
Oh dear.
Is it hard to be impartial, Isha, like when because I know you do a lot of the England Oz stuff.
Do I sound like I'm impartial?
you do, but like I'm thinking, like, what, because I've seen a clip, it's when I'm bowling Australia and I think I get lavishing out and you're on the combox going yes and like screaming with your arms in the air. I think that was the first time I've seen you like break the sort of like professional, like both sides. And but that was obviously, I've loved that. But like, I know that you're a big England fan, but do you find it hard to be like that, or is it do you just the broadcasting side take over?
Yeah, I think at the start definitely, because I still used to refer to England as we. And I think a lot of players do when they first come into the commentary box, but you have to learn to be, you have to be, you know, a professional broadcaster. So early days, I definitely was spoken to a couple of times, because whenever England were doing badly, my voice would drop and I'd just sound really depressed.
But it's that keeping a lid on it, isn't it? I remember in... I think it was like 95, was that when sort of Cork took all those wickets against West Indies? David Gower on commentary at one point, I think he bowls it short, he clips up towards, and they've got a few close fielders, and Gower's commentating, and he goes, "Catch it!" really loudly. And you think, how can you, you know, you're so used to being in the middle there and being able to sort of get involved with it. It must be, you know, having to sort of kind of put a lid on that is such a challenge in those exciting moments.
But that's where the cameras kind of catch you out a little bit, because you're not expecting them to turn that around and show everyone.
Yeah, they shouldn't really be there, should they? I know it's a sort of fun innovation for people sitting on their sofas at home like me, but it's not, from your point of view, I'd have thought, well, perhaps contractually you have to say it's a marvellous idea and really there ought to be more of this sort of thing. But it does seem sort of intrusive, because you're there to be commentating, so you'd like to be able to just sort of wince and groan and put your head in your hands when someone does something disastrous, or, I don't know, say, for instance, three batsmen get out to short balls in no time.
And spin on your chair.
And spin on your chair. Get stuck on a cable. Yeah, like, well, look, the other important thing in broadcast, so this is a famous story that Kerry Packer sort of called up to the commentary box, I think when Ian Healy was on commentary or one of the Channel 9 crew, and just said, "I'm paying you to make this interesting." So rather than being cheerleaders for one particular team, like when a team is winning so well, you've always got to try and bring the other team into the game. So I'm very conscious of that. When there's a team with their backs against the wall, I'm always trying to think of how they're going to win the game.
Yeah.
So I'm very conscious of that when we're on air, is how do you make this a game of cricket? And by the, I think it was the third test of the Ashes, my producer was saying, "Ish, like, try and build them up. And I was like, I like pressed down to speak to the gallery. I was like, I can't, like, literally I built it up so much. It was after a tea break. Sorry, Woody. But it was after a tea break. And England started so badly, and I was like, I can't polish this turd. I buzzed out to the gallery and I was like, I cannot polish this turd. I'm really sorry. I'm trying my hardest. But like, at some point you just gotta be honest and say, this is terrible. Like, this is so bad. They're not bowling how they should.
Mm.
But yeah.
Does anyone, I sometimes wish whoever runs these things rang up the gallery and said, have you all noticed this is a cricket match? Could everybody stop talking about f***ing golf? That would be my first thought.
No.
Absolute favourite.
That's definitely been buzzed down to us before.
It is. That's good. Yeah. I'm glad to hear there are some disciplinarians involved. Is it time for Mark Wood's Super Over?
Yes. The last thing I want to ask each other before we go to the Super Over is about Wimbledon. Because I know that you did that and you'll be talking about cricket. How was your Wimbledon experience before we go to the Super Over?
It was, look, it feels like such a privilege to be there. And I know how privileged I am to have that role. But I was shitting myself, I'm not going to lie. Like, when they told me about it last year, I was like, oh my God, I've only got 2 months to get myself ready for it. And part of the thing is, Miles, you'll understand this, like, as someone who's in broadcast, but it's knowing your way around the broadcast, and it's so different to cricket. Like, cricket is bread and butter to me now. Like, as you kind of alluded to, like, I'm there, I'm the conductor, I'm trying to make it all run smoothly, I'm trying to get the best out of my guests. I know what I'm doing in those situations, and I can handle anything. Yeah. Like, if anything comes on the screen, I can handle it. I can do the serious chat. I can bring out the fun. But in this situation,
it's that thing when you're hosting and you're last person there, in a way, aren't you? You know, you sometimes are doing events and you turn up at like 5:30, and they've been working on it for weeks, and really you just want to go, I do need to know what happens when, because when this starts, I'm telling people what happens when.
Well, yeah. It's a little bit like that, and you're out of your comfort zone completely. So last year was probably a little bit more nervous. And then as I went through it, it was really good to speak to Claire Balding, actually, who's one of the best going around. And one of the best pieces of advice she gave me was, it's knowing what you don't need to know. So I went through that whole tournament and I was like, okay, because I was trying to sponge in, literally, you've got a couple of hundred players there in the first couple of days. And I'm like trying to learn about a little line on all of them. And I'm like, well, I actually don't need to know that. What do I need to know? So yeah, that was really helpful. And then it was kind of similar for the Com Games as well. Like knowing what you need to know for your particular stint. And then that really helped me coming into this year where I'd done those more kind of prep behind it as well. And I'd followed the tour throughout the whole year. So I was way more prepped, for when I went in this year. But yeah, it was an amazing experience. I managed to sneak away and get on center a couple of times and saw some amazing tennis. So yeah, it was cool.
I think the thing that worried me would be the all the Eastern European names.
It's hard. I'm not gonna lie.
They sound, I think they lend themselves to a Northumbrian tones.
Yeah. Right. Can we go on the Super Rover? Now that you've hammered me, Tony.
No, I was going to ask one more question, which was, on the basis of having done the Wimbledon thing, if suddenly you were told, right, you're commentating on a tournament for a sport about which you know nothing, how many days, you know, I can't think what that sport might be, but what, how many days would you give yourself? Would you back yourself to think, right, give me 3 days, and I could front this on television, whatever it might be, like a handball or fives or
yeah. Yeah, I could do handball in 3 days, yeah, I reckon.
Kabaddi?
Maybe a bit more. I feel like that's... I'd need to know more about that.
Ostrich racing.
Yeah, so the more obscure it is, the less prep time you need.
Because you can sort of open up by saying, look, none of us really know what's happening, do we?
Basically, that's it. You can just blag it.
Let's have a look at the action. Right, it is time for Mark Wood's Super Over with Ishiguro.
Miles, 90 seconds?
90 seconds. Don't think, just speak, Isha. Go.
Would you rather win a game of cricket taking a blinding catch or scoring the vital runs?
Blinding catch.
What's the best way to catch crabs, the sea kind?
With a net?
I'm happy to go with it. You've arrived at the match and forgotten something. Whose are you going to borrow? If you forgot your bat, who is he going to borrow?
Oh, Danny White's bat.
Custard or whipped cream?
Custard, hot and fuzzy.
You're waiting for the kettle to boil and playing some air cricket shots. What shot are you practicing?
Pull shot.
Most famous contact on your phone?
Oh. Chris Martin?
That is pretty famous.
I love New Zealand.
Your favourite foreign accent? Ivan Nijovic.
Is Geordie foreign?
Yeah, I'll accept. And you've arrived at the crease. What guard are you asking the umpire for?
Middle, please.
Yes, you should go by the barest of all margins. Wow, Miles, in time as well.
You say by the barest of margins. There's nine seconds left to play with. Crabs, do you find bacon on string? Or would you use a net, Woody, or would you lure them out?
No, I'd gun at its back. It's like where its bum is. If you nip it behind its bum, the pincers kind of get you. Classic way.
But that's one that you can scoop in and reach out, is it? Or do you dress as a crab, Woody, and make your way slowly across the ocean floor, sort of building trust?
Yeah, scuttle sideways and just... You'd have to describe that because I'm not actually...
The visuals of that will be lost for our listeners, but Mark Wood is excelling himself.
Yeah, a little crummy. Chris Martin in your phone, Ish. Wow, that was a good one.
I thought he'd be in your phone. He loves his cricket.
No, he's not my phone either.
On the down low, he loves his cricket. Dan Fender?
Oh, Sam Fender's a boy, isn't he?
Yeah, I went to his show in Newcastle. Amazing.
He's good. He's very good. By the way, practicing the pull shot is part of your waiting for the kettle to boil. Exactly the same as me.
I was picturing you do it.
When you asked me,
I pictured you doing it
all the time. I actually think at times I'm like, imagine it's like the fastest ball out again. I'm taking them on and I'm just like top edging them. It's unbelievable. And the crowd's gone wild. I love it.
I love the thought that part of your visualization is you top edging it, as if that's sort of essential to its success, isn't it? If it goes where I'm aiming for, I'm in trouble. But if it takes a top edge, I'm going to get away with it. Right. Have a lovely rest of the cricket season, which I think this year goes on to November the 17th. I just wish we could have more formats.
And then November should be prime crab catching time.
Do you think the franchises should wear autumnal colours? In sort of October, people should start wearing browns and oranges.
Leaf on
that. I like it.
Yeah, the falling leaves.
I'm going to ring the people who make these decisions, should they exist. Anyway, Isha, it's very, very nice of you to come and to deign us with your.
You wouldn't believe it that they do exist.
The kit specialists. Who would I call if I rang the ECB and said, "Hello, it's Miles Chapp. I've got a couple of costumes."
They passed you to about 100 people before you got to the right person. I should have spoken.
I met Keezy in the. Listen to me. I met Robert Key in the bar in Cardiff. I should have brought it up then, shouldn't I? I'm not going to get a chance like that again.
Take your opportunities, Miles.
Damn it. I'll leave it in your hands, Woody. Right, Isha, thank you very much indeed for joining us and being our guest on Middle Please Umpire.
Isha!
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
That Isha Guha interview, I should say, was conducted in, I think, September 2023. So just to put that at its right place in time. Thank you very much indeed for listening to this episode. I'm Miles Jupp. Mark Wood very much remains Mark Wood. He remains not with us at this moment. He has had to turn off his laptop and run off for a bowlers meeting with the rest of the lads in Abu Dhabi. I wasn't invited. I've got, you know, quite a few little insights to share, but for whatever reason, I don't seem to have been put on the call sheet. But, you know, perhaps they'll come crawling back to me and ask what it was that I wanted to tell them. Essentially, it's about just executing your skills and aiming for the right areas. We will speak to you next time. Goodbye.
Oh, should be taken and is taken. Brilliant from Mark Wood. What a spell this has been.
Social Podcast Network.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.